shuffle.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill shuffle.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Kill Shuffle.
Hello.
I'm Donald.
I'm Dylan.
And this week, we bring you reviews of The Joy Formidable, Coheed and Cambria, Slow Crush, Wang Wen, Dieron Grey.
Yes.
And we're going to take a look back at the 2011 second album by Pussifer, which is called Conditions of My Parole.
Yeah.
I've never got to the list that fast. I needed to hold them all in my brain and now they're just on the page.
Yeah, these are the conditions you must pay for.
That's how I used to do exams, and I used to do pretty okay.
Oh, yeah. I've done the junior cert.
You just get all the information right into your brain, and then you immediately, it's the first thing you write when you go into the exam.
Yeah.
And it's all good.
I love those nightmares.
Yeah. So I think this, it doesn't, you know, it's six, right? We've done seven before, but these are six
of our favorite bands and new possible favorite bands.
Sure. High profile releases and also long albums. So this, I usually go out and on a stroll. Today my stroll took me 20 kilometers along the coast of South Dublin to Wicklow. It was quite an odyssey.
South Wales, because it felt like it.
Yeah, well, as we were about to talk about Wales. Wales is involved in this week's show.
Yes,
but I have to say I walked the arse off myself, but I feel pretty good for it.
So. The arse is still here.
Yes, and we've got nice juicy notes on all of the albums.
Yeah.
So I suppose, Dil, any singles that came out this week you want to chat about or?
Not really. The new Light EP is out. That's cool. That's kind of back to earlier Light sound, kind of.
Oh, okay.
A bit. It feels like it, guitar tone wise, but yeah.
Nice.
Excited to see where they go.
Architects are ramping up with a couple new singles for their
Hype Train
album, so that the Hype Train is very much in motion on that, and I'm excited. Really, really excited.
Tenacious D have released their second song from their new album.
Oh, so excited for
Apocalyptico.
That. Apocalyptico. Post-Apocalypto.
Yes, Apocalyptico is the Mel Gibson movie, right?
I think that movie is actually also called Apocalypto.
Oh, well, that's great.
But Apocalyptica is definitely also something. A film or a book, maybe. And I think Metallica are gearing up for the re-release of Injustice for All, which I'm very... As somebody that just maybe listened to Injustice for All for probably the third time through in my life
that
last week.
That came out, I think.
Oh, it's already out?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Because is there bass? Is there bass in the mix now?
There is something in the mix.
Okay.
New. It's new.
Cool. Maybe,
it's hard to put bass in the mix from 30 plus years ago, but.
Because it was mixed out in the first place. But I listened to the original master, and now I'm excited to listen to the re-release just to see how it compares.
Yeah.
But let's kick things off with The Joy Formidable. This is most definitely a Dylan band.
Yeah.
You brought their debut album not the Holy Roar, that's a record label, The Big Roar,
yes,
to the show about 3 months ago, maybe?
Yeah,
3 or 4 months
in
ago.
Hype for this, I guess, to give a bit of context.
It was in hype for this, it was, and as I recall, I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed that album, and I went back to it this week, and it's growing on me even more.
And now, is the picture a little bigger now of what they can do?
Definitely, definitely. Since we looked at The Big Roar, which was from 2011, then I went back and listened to Wolf's Law and The Hitch, and then onto this album, which is called Arth.
Yes, which is bear in Welsh.
Yeah.
I think or something.
Well, I think Arth is bear.
Yes.
But it's like Earth. All caps. Arth!
Yes, the sound a bear would make
in Welsh. Yeah, right. It's supposed to be sort of a mix of like a pun and you play on words and all the rest of it. Yeah. So, it works. It works, definitely. Would you say this is, I don't want to say return to form, because I feel like The Joy Formidable have been really consistently good.
It's a little more themey than the last one. The last one was very kind of, not bare bones-ish, but it had the live studio jam band feel
at
times. There's a lot of fun to be had.
Yeah.
This one seems a bit more thematic.
Definitely, certainly. There's a huge amount of variety from track to track on this.
Yeah, they're messing around with certain feels. I know Ritzy the singer lives in the States now.
Oh, really?
In Utah. So the vast landscape of Utah is definitely a picture I can paint with this music.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Yeah, and then on track, like, just to kind of dig in from the start, the track Cicada, it, you know, it messes in those almost sort of Led Zeppelin-y, like Middle Eastern inspired, mm-hmm. like hot baking desert sun type vibes that
yeah.
you normally wouldn't get from Wales, but you might get from somewhere like Utah.
Yeah, huge drives that can only last an hour and a half to get to the store kind
definitely.
Of thing.
Definitely, yeah, yeah. And it sort of begins and ends with quite an industrial flavor.
Mm.
That first song, I'm going to butcher the Welsh, but it's called Iblun Era or
yeah.
Ira.
Yeah, that was nice. That was a pretty cool call to the.
Yeah.
Call well, the head.
I don't think they'd done. I didn't think they'd done a song in Welsh before.
I don't think so.
So that you know that kind of starts definitely with almost a Rammstein kind of pulse to it.
Really nice build up, very dancey.
Mm. And then Caught on a Breeze at the end kind of has this breakneck fast bass line underneath a slow swelling kind of tense vibe. And I didn't really know what to compare it to. It's somewhere between Enter Shikari and like a
Suifa.
Yeah, Suifa.
Yeah.
Mutiny on the Bounty was another band that I kind of thought, you know, reasonably aggressive and progressive, but not metal. Definitely not metal.
For the most part, this band has been. What, they're touring with Foo Fighters at the moment.
Oh, that's a good fit.
Yeah, such a great fit.
That's a good fit, yeah.
Yeah. The energy is totally there. The drumming is totally kind of Dave Grohl-ish.
Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Matt, the drummer, does some really, really good work here. I think, look at the fact that they're a three-piece.
For the most part.
For the most part, do they have touring?
I think so.
Guitarist?
I think you'd need it.
Yeah.
I think they have before as well. So.
I wouldn't be surprised. It's funny, on Foo Fighters, that you mentioned them, because I think that track, What For?, absolutely fantastic song. Mm-hmm. But that really called to mind.
Where they play a song. One of their old songs in the background on the loudspeaker.
Do they?
Yeah, you can hear it.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what it was. It's one of their songs, but it was such a surprise to see them calling back to an album ago.
Yeah.
Or
that song had a real Foo Fighters vibe, but it almost felt like it had the energy of early U2.
Yeah.
And some of the sort of wink and nod of a band like Maximo Park. Just a very, very well crafted song. And you know, it kind of it comes in ebbs and flows, and there's points where the music kind of stops and peters out and then kicks back in again. Really, really great song.
A really good sense of positivity.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
As well,
I think The Joy Formidable in general, like the name suggests, they're quite a positive band, and they have aggressive, dark, ominous moments, but there's also a lot of really positive, inspiring, kind of upbeat tracks here too.
Yeah, keeping it epic and kind of mysterious all while doing that as well.
Definitely.
So it's quite an achievement.
I feel like there's an influence here, maybe not an influence, maybe it's a coincidence, but I like to think it's an influence of Lara Kay's guitar style on this album.
Maybe.
I hear, especially on The Wrong Side, that that's very Lara Kay from Adebisi Shank.
The octave weirdness.
Most definitely. And it kicks back in on Dance of the Lotus as well. There's another kind of Adebisi Shank style riff that kicks in. But
And there was The Better Me as well has some interesting oddities.
Definitely.
I would say, I wouldn't call them misstep parts of that song, but it very weirdly constructed.
The Better Me is quite strange, and it's definitely in that it's a less successful experiment with that guitar
style.
Like they
do parts where like the guitar is playing the melody and the bass is gone, so the guitar sounds even weirder.
Then
it makes sense when it comes back in later.
Yeah,
it's a pretty rewarding listen. That
I think it is. I think this album in general has a very nice flow to it because it starts intense. And, you know, on Go Loving, which is the second track, it even ramps up further. It just about dips its toe into, like, black gaze territory. It's so driving and thundering and heavy. And then, of course, because it's Joy Formidable, you never know what you're going to get next. So then there's this, like, Turbo Wolf, like, bass octaver riff that kicks in out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And then it ends with this almost out of tune sounding piano that kind of drops in from the sky, but in a way that adds, that makes it more authentic sounding. It doesn't sound bad. It's really nice.
It fits really well.
Piano riff that kind of kicks in. And then it starts to ramp down.
Yeah. It doesn't make this album sound unnatural in any way.
No.
Easily could, because there's so much weird whammy weirdness happening.
There's a lot of that on here, yes, definitely. There's also a lot of, I feel like, especially in the slower songs, like All in All and Absence, yeah. There's definitely a big psychedelic influence.
The Better Me, I believe. Absence, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Really delightful song. I love this. I love the scale.
Yeah, it's a really nice breather. I think All in All almost has that lullaby effect that a band like Mercury Rev creates. This Glockenspiel, it's really mellow, it's nice. So there's definitely something for everyone here. It doesn't...
More layers than last time.
Yeah, like, I think so.
Yeah, a totally different soundscape than what they've done before, I think. Like, they totally changed it up with more bare-bonesy guitar at points.
Yeah.
Not just blocks of chords.
Yeah.
Or wall of sound.
There's more riffing.
Yeah.
There's more riffing.
There's still wall of sound. Oh boy, there is still wall
there
of sound.
There most definitely
like
is.
The second half of All in All is huge.
Yeah. It's just this like screaming tremolo guitars.
Yeah, that's something they do really well is they just blast off with the solos near the end or wherever.
Yeah,
Dance of the Lotus in particular gets me.
Yeah. So that is like a skyscraper riff. You just can't go wrong with it. It's such a thunderingly gigantic riff that write a bad song.
Yeah, it's totally a staple of this band that you can't really find anywhere else.
Yeah.
I'd love to write it myself, but then I'd be like, I'd be writing a Joy Formidable song. So
That chorus on Dance of the Lotus is probably the closest to the style of that or The Wrong Side are probably the closest to the style of The Big Roar, I would say.
Yeah.
But definitely moving forward artistically.
Yeah, keeping it really fresh.
Absolutely. The only thing I couldn't find any information on the producer, and I like the production here, but I do feel like it's treading similar ground to their other albums. I would like to hear Joy Formidable with
I think it's a little
a more Rick Rubin style production job.
Maybe this is personal preference.
Oh, it's probably preference.
I thought it was quite a departure from the usual.
Yeah.
If it, like as I said, it would have the wall of sound. The guitar wall of sound. If it didn't,
I think it does have that though in parts here. I think it's not used to the same extent as
but
it
you're
is
just
on
dealing
other
with so many other moving pieces.
Yeah.
As well, like the tribal oddities that come in that are great.
Yeah.
Cicada is totally a film piece.
Very
song.
Much so.
I love that.
You know I'm always a little skeptical of those type of songs, the ones that veer into mystical Eastern.
Well, that's what this album's all about.
Sounds.
It deals with mysticism and how those things come to be.
Yeah, I don't
in
think
the natural
it's a bad,
world.
I don't think it's a bad attempt at it. Just you know, I'm pretty critical of those types of songs, but I think overall this is a big success. I next time out, I would love to hear. Not that I think this is a great production job, but I'd like to hear one with a slightly drier, more present production job. They tend to go for big booming reverb washed kind of, which we'll talk about again actually with another band this week. But you know, I just would like to hear them produced by someone with more of an active ear for it. But that's, I think this is great.
I think that's the theme for this.
It is
this week.
Maybe. That's
think
actually,
about it.
A theme is appearing very early on in album one. But yeah, there's not too much more to say. I think this is just more really fantastically strong songwriting from the best band in Wales.
Yeah. I guess so. I'll have to check.
Yeah.
Honestly.
As far as British bands that have been around for, you know, more than 10 years, these guys have to be right up there.
They're easily in my top 10.
They're great. They're really great.
Lately.
Yeah. They just kind of have albums you can put on at any time because they've spanned the gamut.
Yeah.
You don't need to be like in the mood for something super heavy.
No.
You know? I think they're...
But what is your favorite song?
Oh,
really?
What For? Like, What For?
Yeah.
That is... Oh my God, that...
Can't argue.
Down, 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 down. Like it's just a masterclass in how to keep momentum going in a song.
I'd have to go for Caught on a Breeze.
Good
actually,
song too,
because I love them all.
Yeah,
but I love the way the album ends.
Yeah,
on such a
those
busy,
wailing, bending kind of.
Yeah, it's on a full circle note.
Guitar, it's very good. Mm. It is. It starts and it starts really well too. So and it ends well. There's only a couple of moments where I lose my attention for like half a second, but really generally it's very consistent all the way through. So
I think it's
I'm going to give it an 8.
I'm going to give it a 10. Sweet. It's interesting all the way through. It doesn't. It did not wane my interest at
Great.
All. I'll tell you that. I was surprised all the way through.
Yeah. And you've loved the Drawer Formidable for years.
Yeah, so this is great.
Yeah,
see absolutely. Them take flight with something new.
Great. Okay, cool. So that album's called Arth. It's Arth with three A's.
Arthur.
By the Joy Formidable. Clearly, we both really enjoyed it, so get on that. Yeah. Okay, cool. Next album. I want to do this one just so we can say we did it. Dear on Grey, because it's been out for the longest of anything we're covering this week.
Yeah.
The Insulated World.
Uh-huh.
So.
Interesting name.
Dear on Grey. We've covered them before.
Yes, we did.
Again, this is another band that sort of wanted to get the hype machine in gear early.
That album came out plus 14 years ago, 2005, so...
Oh, the one we called Withering to Death?
Withering to Death, so... That's a fucking long while.
Really, yeah, it is nearly 14 years. Which I actually, again, went back to this week. Went back to Withering to Death. Oh. But the new album is called The Insulated World, their 10th album.
Yeah.
They've been around since 1997. And they're from Osaka in Japan.
They are.
So these guys are scene heroes. I think, you know, Dear on Grey have their own, basically their own sort of cult.
As I've heard, one of Jonathan Davis's favorite bands.
Yeah, no way.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Jonathan Davis from Korn. Not a small bit of Korn on this album, too.
No, there's certainly elements brought into the forefront.
Yeah.
It's definitely the first album to really gain the hype train in American.
Really?
The American scene.
Okay.
You can see on the Spotify listen, like the popularity rating has skyrocketed.
Wow, okay.
Because on their music videos, they've had like subtitles for like six different kinds of languages for each of the songs, which is great.
That's
totally new.
Have they ever sung in English?
Oh, yeah, a few times.
A few times, just here and there.
Yeah, bits and pieces.
Okay.
Kyo's not very good at it, but...
No. but, okay, so... Right.
Mm-hmm.
I did a little bit of... I kind of wanted to get into the Dear on Grey fandom and just figure out what people think because, you know, they're not a band... You know, I think they can be a band that you need to have a deep and storied history with to understand the context of a new Dear on Grey album.
A little bit. I find it very funny. I saw a photo on the internet recently where it was like... where I think it was in Tower Records and it had J-pop titled over this release album shelf. And I was like, ooh, one J-pop fan's going to get a heart attack once he plays this.
He's going to have to listen to literally like 95% of the tracks to get to the last one, which has only the slightest of trappings of J-pop.
Yeah, there are elements. This is an album of two halves.
Yes.
I think. Or maybe, maybe thirds. I don't know. It's hard to...
I think it's largely in broad strokes an album of two halves. Yes.
Yeah, it's a pretty ballsy maneuver.
Okay.
Because a lot of people like structure in their albums.
What is the first half?
Mosh. It's a moshing album.
Mosh. Yes.
Absolute.
Yeah.
Thrashy mosh.
Speaking in tongues.
so balls to the wall death metal, for the most part.
Metal. Death metal. Some of the riffing it pinwheels for me between little bits of death metal is a lot of bits of nu metal, little bits of metalcore. It just depends on what song and what part you're talking about, but
yeah, and of course, much like Joy Formidable, it runs some weird tribally stuff.
Oh yeah,
at points there are stuff that sounds totally like Sepultura.
Yes, definitely. I would have pegged the Sepultura reference a little closer to the end, but I definitely it's in one of the thrashier bits of that song. Zen.
Yes, Celebrate Empty Howls.
Zetsuentai. Celebrate Hollow Cries, isn't it?
Empty Howls.
Oh, Celebrate Empty Howls. Hey, similar translation. Huh?
Yeah.
You're dead right that is definitely the first half. And then the second half, it moves into more textured, sort of thoughtful songs that have different sections. So sometimes it glues all three together. It has mosh, it has like kind of ambient industrial and then ballad and other songs. It's more just straight up sort of heavy ballad.
Yeah. This pulls a lot of weirdness, even for Dear on Grey, definitely. The production is very odd.
Have you
picked out from different albums, or have you just gone to Withering to Death from this?
No. Well, I kind of was sort of familiar with Vulgar, and then I know Withering to Death quite well now because we covered it. And then, like I was saying earlier, I sort of took a dive into the Dear on Grey forums and stuff, and big fans, and there seemed to be. Some kind of a
entitlement.
A thought that Arch, is that how you pronounce it?
Archer.
Archer. The 2014 album?
Yes, the last one.
That was almost their crowning achievement. Like it pulled together influences from all of their back catalogue and consolidated them into something.
Sort of.
Almost like a greatest hits, but all the songs were new.
Yeah.
And then that this was like an addendum to that. And some of the fans felt like it was... a little unnecessary. Like that, if they had quit being a band, which is ridiculous, but if they had finished after Archer, they'd be like, no, they have like a perfect discography.
Yeah, it's not the kind of band that does that.
No, I don't think so.
This band goes above and beyond.
Did you have that? Because I listened to, like, I only had time to listen like half of it, but I listened like half of Archer. I have to say, I quite liked it.
A lot of Dorian Gray fans are pretty entitled.
Really?
Yeah, they're like, I want this to be perfect.
Yeah.
Like, and I think this album serves, the production serves the songs, particularly in the first half.
Those are my for what they are. It does.
They're my favorite of the sort. To be honest,
of that sort that Dear and Grey have done.
Well, just of any of that genre.
It's not. It's not my favorite type of that kind of song. The riffs. The only band I kind of get away with riffs that are quite limited in their.
Your favorite.
Their range is Korn.
Korn.
Korn have the slow chugging groove.
I would have said. What's your favorite band again?
Soilwork?
Soilwork.
But Soilwork have a huge amount of range and these riffs are like open note riffs.
Yeah, they're really punk hardcore at points.
Yeah.
Then it expands into the kind of thing you would witness them doing.
Yes.
Later on in the later half.
Yeah.
So it definitely deserves patience, and it's a pretty fast album. It's like 50 minutes compared to the normal 70, 75.
Ooh, yeah, it's, I suppose, yeah, by Dear and Grey standards.
So that's the mission. So that's the mission statement, I guess.
Yeah.
Is let's make a new set of songs that haven't been in our our collection yet.
Execution wise, like, how do you feel about you? Because you would know Kyo's performances going back decades. So how does this one slot?
Perfect.
Yeah. Perfect.
I think his voice is pretty solid considering the madness he goes through and the operations he's had to go through. And
has he really?
Yeah, he had some serious throat operations.
Wow. Okay.
In 2013, and his voice has only been getting better and better.
Mm.
I think it's more bare bones this time around.
It's
a mix of the last album,
which
had a lot of melodic, cold, weird, on top of a mountain cathedral sound kind of vibes.
Okay.
Yeah, totally that image. And then The Marrow of a Bone, which was really raw and dirty.
Mm.
But they were very one-sided albums. And that's those two coming together to make this.
Yeah, he does.
Then some.
There's a lot of variety in terms of, like, he does.
No.
He does a lot of singing. He does a lot of several different types of screaming. And then there's some just very, very strange sections of like him sounding like he's having a epileptic face.
Yeah, there's a lot of I don't think anybody does it quite like him.
Where I think he's at his best for my ear is on a track like Followers, where he's playing it relatively straight, because I think when he plays it straight, I think he's got a really solid voice. But I'm not a huge what's that track called, Valleys of Madness? Riff is groovy and cool and I like it. The vocal performance, it just goes a little bit too far into wacky territory for me. Okay.
It reminded me out of Limp Bizkit, out of all things.
Yeah, it does remind me out. Yeah, ooh, wicka wicka
ticka wicka wicka. It gets kind of rap metal, which I really like. That's just a new element. And I love when this band brings new elements because it makes me smile a bit.
Okay, yeah. I can see that it as a like little surprise, it could be nice, but I wasn't really fitting that particular choice. Yeah. And that there's another
I really love the chorus in that song.
Yeah, I think I can.
It's pretty straightforward kind of J-rockish chorus.
Yeah,
Solid. Yeah,
he kind of goes to like try and do an opera line.
Yeah, he does.
Weirdly,
that's what he can do.
Doesn't quite nail it.
It's news to you, but it's not news to me.
Doesn't quite nail it in that song, but yeah, I can, I can appreciate it. I understand that my ear isn't tuned into that kind of generally that kind of singing and screaming he does on the
record, this band gets you out of your comfort zone, if anything.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, a bit risky, but yeah,
that's true.
Yeah.
There's definitely some nice parts on here. Like I say, I think Followers has a really nice kind of combination of a complex bass line with the tremolo guitars going.
I quite like how Downfall ends when everything starts ramping up and there's like a high tremolo guitar at the end. I really love that. That's huge. Yeah. Reminds me of some of the new Korn, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Huge guitars.
It's the production on the. Yeah. It's really the guitars that are too squashed. Like production wise, and I've seen this like across the board, it's not just you or me, you know, everybody kind of agrees that even though clearly it was well recorded, so like some dial was just put a little bit too high on the guitar, so when the guitars are going full throttle, they squash everything else.
Yeah, I wouldn't know what that would be.
It sounds kind of mucky. I think they just, I think they were just mastered a little too hot, just the guitars.
Yeah, it's the same producer as the last album.
Okay.
I think. And they totally sound different.
If they...
So it maybe just, here's a different approach.
Could have been.
Let's try and just serve the production style.
Could have been an overzealous mastering engineer too. It's hard to know. I get the feeling Dear on Grey have, they've done remasters before.
No. Well, they've done recreations of songs in albums.
Oh, I thought I'd read that they'd remastered something. Yeah,
like they reached a pinnacle of great production.
Yeah.
10 years ago. With, Ouroboros, which Ouroboros. I think I may have shown you bits of.
I think you've shown me bits of that.
That is the greatest production of all time. So, it's only to be expected that a band would want to do weird shit later on with production.
And maybe
I would probably go that way.
I don't know. Maybe if they were going for, like, if this is the album that they thought they were going to do a big PR push to move into the States, maybe they kind of thought, well, we need a big radio ready.
Yeah, it seems like that. You know,
radio rock kind of production, and maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, even though a lot of the songs are not built for radio, so to speak, they are maybe like a really really metal station.
Maybe.
I mean, there are some, like, of course. Ranunculus is definitely there in the radio.
They're really hobbling themselves from the get go with the three letters that Japanese speakers find it difficult to pronounce in one word.
Values as Madness was a radio release in Japan.
Oh, was it?
That was a huge one. Yeah.
Really? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
All right.
The chorus is totally up for that.
Yeah, yeah.
And Utafumi, which I showed you a while ago, that got a reproduction job.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's very odd.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad. So, like, would you... is this a triumph?
Yes.
Okay.
I think very close. It's not spectacular.
Okay.
Like the other album... like, just any other albums were.
Okay.
But it's really solid, I think. It's a bit... it's definitely too frantic for newcomers.
Yeah, it's too frantic
for me. Which I was hesitant to have it on this.
Structurally, it's really difficult. Yeah. Because the riffing... If I kind of... felt more melody in the riffing, but the riffings like are quite semitonal, like they go blah, 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 quite a lot.
So with a good pair of headphones,
hard to latch onto.
I have a
very good pair of headphones.
Yeah. Well, for me, it's what do you mean, like the dirty riff, like the absolute cordy,
I just mean like I don't find that. I don't think the riffs are, for the most part, like Valleys of Madness is an exception, but I don't think the riffs as much are like sing along type riffs.
It's definitely
and there's less structure in terms of like verse, chorus, verse.
Yeah, there's more of a metallic
approach
with the guitars on this album.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is interesting. And it varies.
Old school metallic, like Pantera, Metallica or something.
But then again, I'd only be talking about 30% of the guitars on this album. Because a lot of it are absolute callbacks to their old styles.
Right,
The sweep echo guitars, dual guitar solos and all that. That's still there, and they keep on surprising me with weird electronic bits as well. The sampling is really cool.
Yeah, there's some really cool electronic
like
pieces.
I think it was the third last song, Kaigaku no Yoku. That has a really slow, plodding bass line.
It does
in the verse, and I love that.
There's a cool, like, I don't know what you would call it, but there's a very cool sort of synth hit that comes in. Sort of sounds like someone's trapped in a well or something.
During that song,
during the kind of the slow doomy kind of verse.
I thought that was the bass doing that effect.
Could have been. Could easily be like an affected bass. But there's definitely like lots of bits and pieces here that I can latch onto. But I don't think as a start to finish for me anyway, it doesn't have the same impact as like a Withering to Death
or anything. I'd highly suggest getting to the other albums as well.
Yeah. I maybe
it's hard to get a broad sense of this album. Definitely. Yeah. I think maybe a year down the line, I'll think of it with different eyes.
Mm.
Certainly.
Okay.
But it's very hard to get onto, and it's just it's not the most welcoming thing for a lot of new fans.
I think
in
a weird way. Having definitely enjoyed Kyo's performance on previous stuff that I've heard, I think this is probably my least favorite of his performances. But maybe that's more me than him. So I don't know.
I'd rank it almost lowish on the albums released this decade.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. But like overall, it's
high. It's high. Okay. It's middle of the ground.
Middle somewhere. In the middle.
I mean, I can't mean, I can't compare it to the others because it's 100% different to the others.
And you've just, you've only had it for like 2.5 weeks or so. Yeah. So.
Well, I've given it a solid 13 lessons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, a good few. I just love listening to it, and the songs are kick ass.
Yeah.
Like I'm a easy to please fan.
Good stuff.
Like there's a lot of snobbish fans out there that want stuff.
Yeah.
For this band to do, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
You can do that yourself.
So when you know a band, yeah, like yeah. It's all about knowing the band well enough to be able to. You know, there's plenty
accept,
of bands...
Accept the changes they yeah, do.
And to be able to go, okay, this song is like this song off a previous album, but with this new element or whatever. Or, like, I don't have that context.
Or like just being accepting of like, okay, this is a new album of new sounds, but it's not all you're going to do.
Yeah.
Like you already have your whole fucking gambit of songs. Your back catalog is still there.
Yeah.
You still play that stuff. It's just another layer to add.
Yeah.
Especially this late in the career, it's definitely cool to see.
Sweet.
No.
Okay. So what was your favorite track?
That's an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just between Followers and Vise Madness.
Okay.
Yeah, and the first one's really good as well. The first one's an absolute belter.
It's just like 3 minutes just a of huge pure chaos. Belter. Yeah.
Second song, too weird for me, definitely.
Kind of just sounds like a weird haunted.
I like some elements.
Metal carnival.
Yeah, I like some of the. I like some of the drum elements. I don't go back to it. That song.
Yeah, yeah.
But I like some of the weird hardcore drum elements, like the burst double bass.
Yeah,
pedals,
the drumming. The is triple the bass pedals is the best part of that song.
I think instrument out of all the instruments so far, the bass and the drums connect really well, as per usual.
As per.
Yeah, I think it's a bit too frantic at points. I wonder if that's just the problem in doing an album like this.
There's
a better balance with every other album.
There can be. They hit it on certain tracks. I mean, AKA or AKA or whatever it's called. It's very good.
The
balancing that.
Yeah, the first, second half should please fans pretty well.
Yeah, yeah. I think Purity, because it, well, I just love the part at the start that sounds like a brass section from an orchestra having a stroke at the start of Followers. I think it's excellent. But no, I think that song in general has the Kyo's best performance for my money, and just a really nice balance of elements. I like Followers a lot, so I'm going to go with that one.
Yeah. What are you going to give it?
Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, you go first.
Six,
okay. I'm going to give it a 9.
Ooh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, where all right. I'd give most other albums of this a 10.
Yeah.
But I love it. I love it, dude.
Okay. Okie dokie. So that's Dearon Grey, The Insulated World. So a long wait for fans. So,
I'll be sure to school you with some of their old stuff as well. Pick and choose it.
Try dip in when I can.
Yeah.
So let's go over something.
Ooh, yeah. That's my favorite band out of the way. So there we go.
Totally different.
Here's another band.
This is another band. This is a nice short one.
Is it?
This is the band called Slow Crush.
Oh, great. Oh, I thought you were about to say Coheed and Cambria as a show.
No. I don't want to delve into another band with like decades of history just yet. Okay, this is a band with on their debut album.
Holy shit.
Band is called Slow Crush. And the album, if you bear with me, do you know what's up here?
No, I don't.
But anyway, they're on Holy Roar Records, who are a record label that we quite admire around here.
Yeah.
The album's called Aurora, which is also the name of the last track.
Aurora Borealis.
Aurora Borealis. This time of year, they're from Manchester, and they share Holy Roar Records with some excellent bands like Departures, Employed to Serve, Mal, Rollo Tomassi,
yes.
And big favourites, not necessarily big favourites of ours, but huge scene heroes at the moment, Conjurer.
Mm-hmm.
So Holy Roar have a knack for picking quality bands. Is this how you came across them? Did you see the Holy Roar tweeting about this, or
no,
did you come across
them? This is on the mix, weekly playlist.
Popped into the mix.
Yeah.
Okay. So what musical zone are we in with these guys?
A few.
Okay.
A few ones of Dreamwave, the whole post-punk weirdness.
New gaze.
New gaze.
Shoe gaze.
Not so much. I'd say that because the production is far better than any shoe gaze band I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Like, proper. This is no fucking, like, like tinny sound.
Yeah, this doesn't sound like it was recorded in a wind turbine in 1986.
This has chunkiness to it.
Huge amount.
Certainly,
of
and riffage.
Yes.
Which is missing from that for me. I have a bone to chew with fucking shoegaze.
I think you like the philosophy of shoegaze, but it's the approach.
Yeah.
That it's a bit nasal gazing. Doesn't connect. The band describe themselves as being heavy like a gloomy dream, yet soothingly vibrant.
Yes.
Which is a pretty accurate description, actually, of the sound.
Mm.
It's very fuzzy and buzzy and heavy with big, big sort of hefty slabs of chords with Isa, I think is her name, Holiday, the singer. And she just sort of wafts over everything. She's like a mist on the top of the mix.
Yeah, she's in the mix. She's not on top of the mix, I'm certainly sure. She's definitely like...
Or she's, yeah.
I could mistaken her for a synth listening far away.
Her vocals are one step below everything else.
Yeah, and then it only comes at points that are slower at a pace.
Yeah.
In the songs where you actually do realize...
Collide or whatever that track is called. Collide is kind of the ballad, and then she gets a little bit more time in the spotlight there.
Yeah,
but when the band
and Tremble as well.
Tremble too. Yeah.
That was the first song I heard.
Yeah, Tremble is probably the heaviest thing on here. Actually, kind of almost reminded me of Alcest.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's the closest to bringing in the influences of some of the other like the more black gaze end of the Holy Roar sound.
Yeah, reminded me of some of Deftones' slow.
Yes.
Slow, sexy, heavy songs.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Generally speaking, though, I think we're definitely in the bands that came to mind for me were more like Sonic Youth or My Vitriol, My Bloody Valentine, sure, Basement, Daylight, at times bands like Perish, Jaws, Dive, Nothing.
The drumming got very really tight and kind of on the beat.
Yeah, even that band we covered last week, Horror, My Friend, I think they definitely must share certain influences.
Yeah.
What this band do less than some of the other bands in the genre is they do less of the lead riffing. It happens on Beached, and it happens on the standout single, which is Shallow Breath. Is that what it's called? Shallow Breath.
Mm. This is definitely more of the riff ready side of things.
It's big slabs rather than necessarily like guitar hooks, which I think maybe lets some of the songs blend together. So the album is a vibe.
Maybe near the end. More so near the end, I'd say.
Okay.
I think the start keeps it pretty varied.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think they clearly have a sound which is very well formed.
Yeah.
I think this album has buckets and buckets of potential because I love this. Like, this is definitely my jam in terms of the sound.
Like, I heard Tremble for ages.
Yeah.
Then I finally got the whole of the album and it was not quite that. It was a different.
Yeah.
Different taste.
Funnily enough, that's funny that because you obviously came in on Tremble, that was the first thing you heard, but for me, I would be listening to it in the background and it would just kind of be these waves of fuzz. Yeah, good, but nothing was jumping out at me until that, you know, Shallow Breath.
Yeah.
That would always just leap out of the speakers at me and I'd go, whoa, okay, here we go. And then there's a similar riff in Beached.
Yeah,
I can call it to mind. Those two moments were the ones that let me contextualize the rest of the album. Because before that, I kind of felt like I was sort of lost in like a hall of mirrors of just like sort of fuzzy, dreamy, shoegazy kind of vibes. Whereas you needed those riffs to anchor you in the album.
Yeah,
but they do.
There are definitely points.
There are points. Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
I'm grateful for it because this could easily fall into the trappings.
Yeah.
Of the usual kind of dreamscapey sound. But it doesn't because the riffs are pounding huge.
Yeah, they're a band I definitely want to keep an eye on for sure. I don't think this is the finished article just yet for me as a full album. I would definitely pull like three or four of these songs and go like, these are among the year's best songs of that genre. But as like a start to finish, I'm a bit, I think I really, really, really want to hear where they go on album number two.
Yeah.
Do they lean into those songs that have the central sing-along riff, or do they lean more into the more like stuff like Aurora or Collide, which is the more sort of ambient, slow, sludgy? Yeah.
That's a hard thing to call.
Yeah, it's possible to call at this point.
If I was in the band, I'd do something totally different.
Yeah,
and but that's just me.
They might do,
yeah.
They might do, but I thought it was well worth listening to.
Yeah.
I don't think
fun listen. I like how it ends as well. I do like how it ends.
Oh yeah, definitely, and it's got that those military kind of snare rolls going in Aurora, which is not something you often hear in the genre. It's very cool.
Yeah. Just a lot of like small little details that I really appreciated.
Was Teenagerist this year?
No.
It was last year. Last year. Oh, yeah. Well, then. I was going to say, this is not going to top Teenagerist for me, but Teenagerist was last year. So. Yeah. I think
it's not quite that. You know, the vocals are not as prominent. You know, that might maybe my only gripe in this album is that I wish they were a little less or a little more.
I understand what they're going for, but it's when you hear like a Joy Formidable, when you know Ritzy is so like front and center, and you hear every single syllable.
Yeah, it works.
I like that.
As I said, it really worked for me with Tremble.
Tremble, yeah,
absolutely.
Cool. Yeah, no, it's definitely worth the time, especially if you like those type of bands. If you just want to lay back and let a warm, cuddly 90s blanket envelop you.
Yeah.
With a really clean, crisp, modern production.
At a train at 10 p.m.
Sure.
Yeah, let's
do it. Album's called Aurora. My favorite song is, it's a fist fight between Shallow Breath and Beached. I'm gonna actually go Beached.
Okay.
It's just a poppier.
Yeah.
It's the song that most kind of calls to mind like Dive or Jaws or something. Like it doesn't quite have the same drive to it, but I like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit more delicate, so yeah. I'm gonna go Beached.
For me, it's a choice between Glow and Tremble.
Sure. All right.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give it a 7.
Give it a 8.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Not the typical album that you'd normally bring to the show. So that was a nice curveball.
Yeah. It was a surprise to me to hear the full album anyway. So I was like, I might as well stick on.
Yeah. You go, Slow Crush.
Yeah.
Good, very well titled band too. I like that name. Okay. All right, we better do it now. Let's talk about the new album from Coheed and Cambria. Yeah,
my other favorite band.
Yeah.
So we've got Dear Grey and we've got Coheed.
It's a big week.
Yeah.
Coheed and Cambria. You may be a bigger fan than me overall. I am. Are you familiar with all their stuff?
Yes. Absolutely. Not quite the lore and the story and the comics.
Oh god.
I haven't read them yet. But they're in Forbidden Planet now, which is great. I will pick them up.
So Coheed and Cambria, they've been around for 24 years almost. Yeah,
when they were Shibuti.
So they're from New York. Claudio Sanchez is the name of the lead singer.
Yes.
And I was a chief songwriter also.
Yes.
And chief conceptualist.
Yes.
So yeah. So from interestingly, like, because you know sometimes bands will tack these things on later, or they'll just do like a concept album. Coheed and Cambria are a concept band, so from the get go they've been doing this concept with every album called the Armory Wars. Is that how you pronounce
it? The Armory Wars.
And it's sort of an intergalactic tale about a series of planets held together by beams of energy, and there's like a prince and a princess, and they're fighting against some sort of overlord, and he's like a tri-mage. And
it is very close to Saga, if you know anything about Saga.
Yeah.
It's kind of close to that.
Okay, it's like a big space opera.
Yeah.
But the reason why somebody like me can get into it, because I wouldn't, personally, and I'm sure it's the same for, I'm sure it is Coheed fans are split almost down the middle between people who are crazy invested in the Amory Wars story and they want to know what each character is doing at any given moment on any given album, and then fans like me who are like, but they write really good pop songs.
Yeah, great fucking best prog rock you'll hear this side of the millennium.
They have, Claudio has a knack for, even though he might be singing about like chapter 7 of act 2 of some mad,
this is volume 1
right
of Axis.
I don't even know the full title of the album. I should probably say that, but you know, even though you might be in that random part of this story, you always feel like you're just hearing someone sing a song about something more general.
The full title is Vaxis 1, The Unheavenly Creatures.
The Unheavenly Creatures.
Yes.
Act 1?
I think so. Act 1, yeah.
Act 1, The Unheavenly
It's not a double album, thankfully.
There may be an Act 2.
There has been a double album before.
Yes, that's right.
That came out a while back. Yeah. But,
well, 1 hour and 20 minutes of Coheed and Cambria was plenty for me in one go, so that's fine.
Do you know, what have you tackled from Coheed?
I'm very familiar with Good Apollo and Burning Star 4.
Yes.
Which is their big...
Thankfully, the closest to this sound.
That's their breakthrough album, I would have said.
Yeah.
And I'm also very familiar with and I guess uncommonly very, very fond of The Year of the Black Rainbow, which is actually probably my favourite Coheed album.
Yes, Atticus Ross produced, I believe.
Yeah. Think that one is a little bit of a black sheep for fans. I don't think it gets as much love as the rest.
Yeah, because it's much love for me, but yeah.
So those are the two that I know really well. I had listened, had a little listen to the last one, which was their only non-concept album, mm-hmm. The Colour Before the Sun, mm-hmm. and I remember liking it.
I quite enjoyed that.
But now we're back to the Amory Wars.
Yeah, most fans really enjoyed The Departure as well.
Okay, good.
But they knew it was going to come back.
And now, and this is self-produced as well, and
that's impressive.
That was a good decision.
That's impressive.
Because all the good things about this album, one of the best is how
take,
it sounds.
Take all the time you like fucking to get hell. Something like this out.
It sounds massive.
Yeah. 10-minute epic opening it, so
yeah.
it's gonna need that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it a 10-minute epic?
Prologue and our sentencer were...
Are they a total of 10 minutes?
Technically the same song.
That is crazy, because that goes by in a blink.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a dude who likes long albums, but again, Coheed and Cambria, they book your expectations in terms of when you're going into an album like this, you expect long passages of like wanky solos and like synthesizers just doing nothing and all the rest of it. What they manage to do is they just have these songs that are really, really catchy prog rock kind of pop songs, and they just, there's just loads of them.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way it runs. Like every song almost has some section that will get stuck in your head.
Yeah, pretty really varied.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely.
I wonder, you know, Dark Sentences is the second track? I mean, the first track is like, in the distant reaches of the universe, whatever.
The distant future.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The year 2000. You're like, okay, all right, okay, you're getting warmed up for it.
Yeah.
And then it would have to really hit with something good. But then when that riff comes in for Dark Sentences and they have the cheesy, like, hey,
yeah.
I'm like, oh, my blood starts pumping.
The crowd pleaser.
Yeah, and then that chorus, I guess maybe it's a little nod to the opening for Good Apollo and Burning Star, because it's like, he goes, welcome home.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's Welcome Home is their biggest song.
There's a lot of that coming up, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. That song in particular, like, it starts off with, it's got a real 6/8 feel, so it's like a swashbuckling, almost piratey kind of swing to it.
Yeah,
they're such a joyful band.
Yeah.
Like, everything about them
even at their most serious, which this album is the most serious since, like...
Oh, yeah.
Most serious and nostalgic, I think, since...
Your
last venture, I guess.
Yeah, I would say so. It's funny, yeah, they can manage to be serious, and definitely Claudio sounds angrier than I've ever heard him before at times.
Yeah.
But, like, at the same... It's all day glow... bright primary colors, like pyro, major chords, just energy and life, and that, you know,
you really get that with Toys, I think, especially off the bat. One of my favorites.
Yeah, it's got this like all this kind of sunny off kilter 70s metal kind of riff that carries
there's some
it along.
Queen,
yes,
it blistered into this as well. Like,
oh yeah,
fucking, oh, where am I
the
going?
Gutter. The gutter goes full Queen in the middle eight.
Yeah, at the very end. Yeah. I love it though.
Yeah,
totally like Highlander era at Queen, which is great.
Yeah, but meanwhile, the start of that song is like almost as heavy as I've heard them be.
Yeah,
like, I would never have thought of Claudio as a screamed vocalist, but because he has such a beautiful, almost borderline operatic kind of voice at times, but then, you know, a lot of times here he just lets rip and kind of ends lines.
He's got the raw voice, and he
with a rasp,
much like Keo in a lot of Darren Gray stuff, can hold the scream through the through the sweeping notes.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was a really good call to release. They released sort of a taster EP, a couple of weeks ago.
They compiled it,
which had Dark Sentencer and Unheavenly Creatures,
the gutter,
and Old Flames on it.
Yeah, yeah.
So those would, I would say, would be like the four biggest...
The singles, basically.
Singles. And so once you kind of know them and they're already in your brain, it does carry you through the album quite well.
Yeah, and boy, there's still plenty of surprises.
Oh, yeah.
Because we get to Black Sunday, it gets really prog.
Yeah.
Dark, and Queen of the Dark, which... Hooray, Coheed and Cambria, you've created my favorite song.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's so good.
That one almost
so
like reminded me of the Jonathan Davis solo stuff.
Yeah,
it's real dark.
Yeah, it's an extremely catchy, slow Coheed song.
Yeah.
Which is a first for Coheed.
Also sounds a little like Depeche Mode. I mean, it's just got that slight, like something's really wrong. You're like, oh, what's wrong?
Yeah. I want to see all of this album visualized,
yeah.
Which you might be able to if you pick up the special edition.
Do you want to know something mental?
What's it?
Mark Wahlberg optioned an Amory Wars film. Like, there's
serious.
It's possibly in production now. It's the quote that I read was from 2012, okay. But supposedly Mark Wahlberg was interested in making this series into a film.
I think I heard something like that.
Yeah,
but yeah. Jared Way is getting the Umbrella Chronicles on Netflix next year, okay. So hopefully Claudio gets his stuff soon.
Hopefully, you mentioned Queen. I hear a lot of Police on Love Protocol.
Yeah,
didn't expect to hear Sting on a Coheed album, but there you go.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's not overly orchestrated, but there's very nice, well placed strings on the Pavilion, that mm-hmm. track.
Yeah.
And then I didn't I did not expect to hear sort of an emotional sort of hard rock song. There's quite a bit of Thrice on that song, All on Fire.
Oh yeah,
It's got a really different vibe to most Coheed stuff.
Mostly, yeah.
I just think it's.
They keep on finding something new, which is cool.
It's almost like nuanced post-hardcore influenced hard rock. Very, very cool.
It reminded me of their double album stuff a bit, which I appreciated. Really? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I need to go back to that.
Yeah, that's it. This is a cool one.
And then again, like, there's just so much variety in this album.
Old Flames is definitely the most varied.
Old Flames sounds like it could be playing at a 1960s high school dance.
Yeah, because funny you should say that, because the music video has a dance number
slash
burglary going on at the same time.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
There's a big na-na-na-na-na kind of like hook to that.
Yeah, very like My Chemical Romance end of the era sound.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's very rare to be able to, you know, leave an album on such a high point as Old Flames, but it really does.
It's definitely a call to the whole series.
Oh, is it?
Okay. Not a bookend, I don't think, but definitely a bittersweet vibe to it.
Okay.
Yeah, but fun.
And then
keeping it fun.
A little, maybe the only misfire, and it's not even really a misfire. It's just
your preference.
It's just a little cheese ball. That last track, Lucky Stars.
I love that. Pearl of the Stars was one he did on the album You Love, You're the Black Rainbow.
Yes, that's right.
Which was a love letter to his wife.
Yeah, Pearl of the Stars is great.
Then he's done like love letters to Atlas, his son, mm-hmm. in the Color Before the Sun.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of seems like a love letter to his story.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. So if you think of it in that context, I quite like it.
I still think it sounds like Enrique Iglesias, but okay.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I didn't think it totally belonged. I would have liked to
see it. No, it doesn't totally belong. I think there's a really nice acoustic guitar line. There's a like sort of
the solo's great. That's him doing the solo.
Yeah, no, it's
for the
nice.
Most part, Claudio does the solos, which is odd.
Yeah, and maybe another nod to his like Latin heritage, which he doesn't often like dip into.
Yeah, he has his elements.
Yeah. Overall, though, I mean,
one of my favorites.
I think it's a. Did not expect to enjoy it as much as I did. Yeah. To be honest with you,
like I normally enjoy my kind of Coheed album is more the hard rock with a bit of weird. Definitely. No World for Tomorrow was that. That had the Running Free.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And stuff like that on it.
I actually saw them perform No World for No. Is no no. I'm sorry. I saw them performing Keeping Secrets of Silent Earth in full.
Yeah.
Of which I knew nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
At Heavy. I was like, wow, there's a big blob of hair singing on a stage. Dude's got big hair.
Yeah, it gets bigger and bigger.
Jesus. I'm very excited to like tap into the nuances.
There's a lot
of
to
this.
Get onto this.
Like three lessons was not
so many nuanced albums this year or this week.
My poor brain is pouring out my ears, but I can tell it's good.
Yeah,
I can tell it's good.
It's very good.
Because normally with it, I would be like bashing my head into a brick wall with a 1-hour 20-minute album unless I loved it, and I think I really love this. So
yeah, that's pretty telling.
You know me.
Yeah, yeah. I know you're a picky guy.
I'm picky. I'm definitely more picky when an album is over 40 minutes long. Up to 40 minutes, I can usually get to grips with anything.
I mean,
but after that, I'm like, no, you need to really hold my attention.
Yeah.
And this does.
Yeah, it does.
It really does. Yeah. So like, what's your favorite track?
Jesus, man. That's...
Jesus.
As hard as the Dero album for me. Certainly.
Is it to pick?
Yeah, absolutely. If not more hard.
Mm.
Because this is definitely not a tale of two halves. This is
no, it's consistent all the way through.
I think Queen of the Dark.
Queen of the Dark. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You said it was your favorite Coheed song of all time. So sure.
Yeah, in that vein,
it makes sense. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When it comes to the epic ones, it was up there with Welcome Home.
Cool. Great. Yeah, I think I'm going to go All on Fire because it was such an unexpected left turn.
Old Flames is totally
perfect. Old Flames too. Oh my God, it's a great song. Yeah. Great song. Yeah, yeah. Going out in style. Just never going to get that song out of my head.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so the song of the album, in case you missed it, because you, let's be honest, it's quite long, is called... Oh, damn it. Spotify doesn't have the full name. I think it's Vaxxus.
Yes, Vaxxus.
Vaxxus Act 1, The Unheavenly Creatures by Coheed and Cambria. Yeah. Check it out because it's really more accessible than it sounds. Yeah,
I wish I got the box set, the deluxe edition box set, because it is this huge vinyl storybooks and and a mask. Fucking mask, the main character.
A fucking mask. Oh. Okay, last new release of the week. We're going all the way to China.
Yeah.
Which is not a musical destination I expected to be going to anytime soon. And to talk about Wang Wen.
Wang Wen.
Wang Wen. And their new album, Something About the City.
Yeah. Invisible City.
Invisible City. I knew I had it there.
Yeah.
Invisible City by Wang Wen.
They're from Dalian.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, in China. Mm-hmm. They've been making music since 2002.
Yeah, they're the forerunners of a weird prog instrumental.
Yeah, I mean, they call themselves China's number one post-rock band, and I believe them.
Yeah, yeah. I've been with them since the start.
Have you really?
Yeah, bits. I haven't been a huge fan, but this has caught my attention.
When did you first hear, and how did
2008.
You first hear them? Really?
Yeah. But this is the first time I've found them on Spotify, you know.
The PG Lost split, or no? Before that, even?
Maybe. Because I kind of found out about them at the same time.
Oh, okay, sure.
But this is the first time I was like, oh, this band exists. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
So I got the whole 2010 onwards side of albums to enjoy from then on.
Great.
Which is great.
Because they name drop Mogwai, Explosions in the Sky, and Godspeed You Black Emperor in their own set of influences. And I think that definitely is a good jumping off point.
Yeah, and Page Lost, of course. I know you.
Oh, is that how you pronounce it?
Page Lost, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely the zone we're in here. It's expansive.
Mm-hmm.
It's atmospheric. It's very nostalgic, melancholic. In a similar way to L-1011, but it's definitely definitely vaster than that.
Yeah. More brooding at parts.
Yeah.
More delightful at the flick of a pin.
Oh yeah, like, sure.
It definitely surprises you at parts you wouldn't expect.
Oh.
First all song, time. Daybreak, is totally that.
Yeah.
Encompassed.
Yeah.
It starts with a weird lullaby
sound. That's right. It starts with what kind of sounds like a Glockenspiel or something.
Yeah.
And then a theremin comes in, and you know, theremins are like
sounds very alien. But then it starts to sound really soothing later on in the song.
Oh yeah.
And that totally uplifting as well, which I really liked how they did that.
And then that gets that tablecloth gets ripped off for like a almost sort of cartoon haunted house type riff that just about works. It works.
It almost
sounds like a Slayer or something.
I think it actually totally works.
It totally works. That's what I'm saying. It works. Even though it's a huge gamble.
It just multiple listens needed. Theme, but yeah.
You need to understand what they're trying to do with a lot of these songs. Like the second track as well, Stone Scissors, like instruments almost sort of come and go like characters in a play. Mm-hmm. Like they just enter and then they exit.
Yeah. Definitely the trumpet player.
Oh my God.
Comes and goes, absolutely.
Best use of trumpet since, I think they were similar, came at similar times. I think American Football maybe is a little older, but American Football, and then there's an amazing trumpet break in a song called Kids from Kibble and the Fist of Light by Biffy Clyro.
Yep. Light had a great trumpet part in the last album. Yep.
Yeah. The trumpet lines on this album are just godlike. They're amazing.
Yeah.
I have to give a special shout out to Mail from the River.
Yeah. First song I heard.
It's as good a post-rock song as I've ever heard.
Yeah.
All
the elements. Yeah,
there's these lovely synths, and that's not just, there's a beautiful trumpet performance in that song, but then there's also these synths that come in that really remind me of public service broadcasting.
Mm-hmm.
That do do do, just, and then obviously all the time you're kind of anchored with really tight bass drums and then guitar in each ear.
Yeah,
that's just picking out these really 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 nice, like, you know, as I say, like nostalgic kind of chords, and then it just perfectly transitions into this huge thundering finish. Mm. They have a real knack for the crescendo, like Godspeed You.
Yeah, we've totally heard it from like Irish
fans,
which are a bit more bleak, I would say.
Yeah, well, if you're talking about late career God as an Astronaut, then yes, definitely.
Yeah. But I think this band keeps it mysterious and uplifting when it needs to be.
Yeah.
It gives you a breath, which enjoy. To test out different weird synths.
Yeah.
Like, it does a lot of odd experimentation.
And it's like, this is just a really good example of why diversity is a good thing, because you're not really necessarily going to hear all of the regional instruments that get used here. Yeah. Like, there's some kind of a Chinese version of a metal, you know, those like metal springs, those little sticks that's being used.
Yeah.
I don't know what you call them, little metal rods. There's some sort of a flute as well that gets, it doesn't sound like a normal flute, but it's definitely some kind of a flute that gets used. There's various different, it never sounds like, you know, music you'd hear in a nail salon or like a massage parlor or a tea room or something. But there's definitely moments that give this a flavor you would not get on a Mogwai album or, you know, Explosion in the Sky or whatever. It has its own, really has its own thing going on, even though it's clearly influenced by those other acts as well.
Yeah. I think Lost in the Train Station was really interesting because it's spooky and claustrophobic.
Yeah.
In very much in the sense of being lost in a Chinese train station or a Japanese train station or anything. I've been there and I've felt that kind of feeling, and it's oddly relatable, so there's a lot of that.
I think it does kind of, there's three songs in the middle that kind of take the pace down,
like Slow Dance,
Solo Dance,
the Solo Dance, and
Lost in Train Station, and Bamboo Crane, and then after that it kind of ramps up again.
But I think that's good. I do think that's really good.
Yeah, I because this is a very chill sort of album overall. Generally speaking, I think it works.
I wish it had the heaviness a bit more, though.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah. Like, that, I agree.
You get that near the end, though. Oh, boy. Oh,
Jesus, yes.
Silence Dalian, absolutely.
Silence Dalian, yeah.
Is so startling. It reminds me of the...
Carol of the Bells. Tell me it's Carol of the Bells. 28
Days Later.
Oh, damn. Okay.
Yeah, it reminds me of that.
Sorry, but it has the...
Oh yeah, it does as well.
Yeah, and then when the trumpet kicks in, it's like film noir.
Mm. There's a lot of that. A lot of film noir in this.
Definitely
synth film noir prog rock.
It's trumpet film noir prog rock. Yeah,
what the hell? It's such a real.
And then
cool
Silence Dalian again, like in Daybreak. You know, at some point in the middle, the rug gets pulled out from under you, and all of a sudden it's like this kind of. It's like apocalyptic organ song. And then outro is
nice, really beautiful,
subdued, beautiful. It's, yeah
synthy,
reminds me of
bubbly and weird.
The very end of Welcome Reality by Nero.
Or
that band Infinity Shred that I'm obsessed with.
Weird underwater feel. I don't know how, but it is there.
Or like something just spinning off in space
into foggy old China.
it is amazing that, you know, that a band can sound, who are from somewhere that's so foreign to us, and then yet can make it sound so relatable.
Yeah, you know? There's great scene in Asia for prog rock bands lately, like this.
Cool.
Just post rock, rather. Like, I've shown you a few of them.
You have,
before,
one
from Korea.
Yes, Jambanai. Great band.
Don't think we've covered them yet, but we probably will.
I think Mono are Japanese, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah, and Light, obviously.
Yeah, so very much.
But these guys are definitely more emotional, textured, slow food than some of those bands.
Yeah, maybe not a more emotional, but just a different slice. It's just something new.
Yeah.
Which is really relieving. And
I can't wait to go back to the back catalog, because I was so impressed by this.
Yeah.
So impressed. Some really interesting musical choices, production choices that I don't think you'd get away with, but I'm glad they did them.
Mm-hmm.
Like in, I think it is actually both Mail from the River.
Yeah.
Is it Mail from the River? Could be. Something else. There's one song where they side pan the drums, which is a really unusual choice, and it actually works really well for
for
setting you off kilter.
Yeah.
It's just
Mail from the River is like two different songs melded together and making it sound flawless.
Yeah.
Like the chorus and the verse.
Yeah, definitely. And then when it gets as heavy as it does, like towards the end of Stone Scissors, it's just like almost sounds like doom metal. I mean, they're going at like quarter time. It's just walls and walls of synths and guitar and everything.
Really memorable for instrumental music as well.
Really memorable. Yeah. There's no, I don't think there's any Chinese on this. I know there's some German spoken word.
There is, yeah.
And there's all the, there's other spoken word at some point.
Bit of public news broadcast vibes from that. Yeah,
very much so. Very much so.
Definitely an international breakthrough band from China, which is great to see. I'll certainly come back for more from that.
I really hope they do the business.
Oh, and totally look up their discography as well.
Yeah, I'm gonna go back. I'm gonna work my way backwards. Yeah,
yeah.
There's a beautiful splash vinyl for this that I want.
There's a great one for Slow Crush as well. Great one for all of these albums so far.
There is a good one for Slow Crush too. Yeah. Great. So my favorite track, I mean, if it wasn't obvious from how much I was gushing about it, Mail from the River is my favorite track. Yep,
Mail from the River. But what else would you choose?
Oh, if not Mail from the River, I would be a straight knife fight between the first two tracks for me.
Daybreak. Yeah.
Daybreak, probably, yeah. Would be my second favorite.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, same.
Sweet.
Nine
out of 10.
I think same exact thoughts on that.
For Wang Wen, great music from all the way from Dailan in China.
Do we rate Coheed?
Oh my god, do we?
Because I'd give it a 10. I'm giving it a 10. Unless I said that twice in this podcast.
Wow, we suck.
I'm giving Coheed a 10 twice.
You giving it a 10? I'll give it a 9.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So that's, all right. That, well, we've really fucked our structure here, but Cody Cambria gets a 10 from Dylan, 9 from me. Wang Wen gets 9 from both of us.
Yeah.
Go forward. Mm. All right, great. Let's hop on our time machine. No more
listen
scoring.
Listen to all of these albums, except maybe Darren Gray. That might that might give somebody a heart attack.
Sorry.
Listen to the second half. Listen to the second half.
Yeah, yeah. See, here you go.
But if you like metal, then listen to the first half.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So. Yeah, for
you won't be too shocked.
First song is like just like fizzing up a Slipknot can and then cracking it open.
To me, that was pure like, this is the best thing I've heard since Slipknot's first album. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah, boy. you'd be biased. All right, okay. Let's hop in our time machine and go all the way back to 2011 to talk about... This is always a confusing point for me because Maynard James Keenan, right? Lead singer in Tool. Lead singer in A Perfect Circle. Yeah. Lead singer in Pussifer.
Yeah.
There seems to be a musical through line with all of these bands. It's kind of progressive, heavy, but not, I wouldn't go as far as say like metal, but like heavy guitars, dreamy sounds, definitely atmospheric electronic textures and stuff like that, what would be common elements to all three.
Yeah, especially this.
But he doesn't write the music for any of them.
He does his vocals.
He does
the absolute melody.
What? The music, it's so weird. They're all different sets of people.
Yeah.
And yet the music kind of has like a through line and I don't understand why.
Just, well, he is the producer for one.
Yeah.
He's got an extremely good ear.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people I know don't play instruments.
Yeah, it's mad though.
So, yeah.
I mean, he obviously has a really distinctive vocal style. I mean, it couldn't be anybody but Maynard James Keenan when he's singing.
He has a very... He's an artist.
Yeah.
As well, so he has a very good visual picture of what he wants.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's quite the lyricist, so he has the words to express it.
So the team behind the music here is Joshua Eustace.
There's a lot of... Yeah.
This is the core three that wrote the songs.
Yes.
Joshua Eustace, who is one half of the Black Queen.
Yeah.
And... You can hear.
You totally hear it.
You can hear that Depeche Mode worship in a really good, productive way on this too, as you can hear it on Black Queen.
Yes.
Karina Round, who's kind of her own, so she's mostly a solo artist. She's a really good singer, and Matt Mitchell, who is mostly a Perfect Circle's producer.
Yes.
But he also plays guitar for Nine Inch Nails live.
Yes, and guitar for this.
Yes, and guitar.
Saw him live. He's great.
So those three, Eustace, Round, and Mitchell wrote most of, if not all of, the music on "Conditions of My Parole," which is the album we're talking about, and it's a very interesting beast.
Written around barrels of wine in his cellar. Yeah,
doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, there's a studio there.
Really?
Why not have the studio in your workplace?
Yeah,
yeah.
What would you say is it like? A lot of reviews for this say that it's not, that it's kind of a bit scattergun and it's like a patchwork quilt of elements and it doesn't really mesh. I'm not sure that's true.
No.
I think there is a default kind of palette for this that does hang together. It's sort of a, definitely there's a rock influence, but it's like it's industrial, electronica, ambient and just a sprinkling of like proggy rock.
Yeah, there's certainly that.
Yeah.
Certainly Depeche Mode feel.
100%. Yes, yes, yes.
Then odd. I think a lot of the album follows the vocal cues.
Yeah.
Quite well. There's a lot of like effort involved in multiple vocalists like careening around.
Yeah.
Later on in the most recent Pussifer, she gets more of a spotlight, but this is her real first appearance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sharing.
She only kind of gets the only real duet on the album is Tumbleweed, the last track. Yeah. That's when Karina and Maynard trade off a little bit. Very, very nice.
Yeah, very nice. But a lot of the cues, like, I have to check.
Toma!
Yeah, Toma. Oh my God.
But yeah, it's funny actually as well listening to this, because I feel like Pussifer being a totally separate musical entity to Maynard's other work was probably a more viable argument like a year ago. Whereas I think since post Eat the Elephant, I think some of the material on here would have worked just as well on Eat the Elephant, because, you know, because the Perfect Circle moved in a slightly different direction.
There's an odd fine line, yeah.
Definitely, there's some stuff here, particularly like The Rapture, you know, that song. I think that song would have worked on
The Weaver.
Eat the Elephant. The Weaver too, yeah. Telling Ghosts.
Yeah. Conditions of My Parole, though, the song is of its own kind.
Very much so.
I love the machismo with that. It's so funny, and it's so in character with them. If you watch the videos, he dual plays this cop. And Duo plays this bunk ass hick.
It feels in a trailer. That for me is the one misfire.
He's going to prison. it's a great theme.
It feels really weird to hear Maynard James Keenan say the popo don't give a shit, but maybe that's just me.
So funny.
the first Pussifer album, this feels more serious, whereas I think the first Pussifer album was called V is for Vagina.
Yes.
And it was like kind of, I didn't listen to it.
It was
so
chill. It was weird and funky, dubby, kind of dubby as well, and had odd chill elements. It has a bit of a through line with this still.
But I feel like this, even though I know the cover's kind of goofy and there's like that song Conditions of My Parole, but generally speaking, this feels more like a serious artistic venture.
Green Valley, Monsoons, Horizons, Telling Ghosts, it's all absolutely there, and it's odd westerny Arizona vibes, because this is all based in Arizona.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, that's the whole area of influence.
Oh, Horizons in particular, that Dust Devil Swept You Away.
Yeah.
Really cool song for several reasons. It first of all, it recalls a very fallow period of like trip hop in the 90s, and it's got that kind of Beck weirdness to it, and Maynard's vocal performance
his clean vocals are on point in this.
Super on point. And for that song, he almost sounds like he's singing through a one of those automatic text generators, or like the text to speech.
Yeah.
Because he's like he kind of cuts his speech. He's like left up you. He kind of puts these little pauses in between his lines. Really works though.
Very intentional melodies in each of the vowels.
Because it
consonants. Yeah.
It sets you like a little bit on edge, and that's what they're trying to do with the music as well. There. Yeah.
Really experimental this time around.
Very, very cool. You know, the drummer is
Four drummers.
Sorry, but there's one of the drummers, John Theodore. He's a member of the Mars Volta and Queens of Stone Age.
Yeah.
So there's a real, they call it a supergroup. So this is what I didn't understand is that like it's Maynard's solo project
with friends,
but it's with friends, and the friends also write the music and he sings on it sometimes on other albums. He's written music, but just this particular one, he left that to his friends and he focused more on the production and creating the vocal palette for this.
Yeah.
For
I really album. It took me a while to really enjoy a Man Overboard, but I really love it now. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't quite have singing in it, you know.
Well,
it has kind of
women
chanting
and children first. It's all kind of
shanty.
Note.
It's totally a shanty.
Yeah, I really like that because it kind of has that angry Maynard that you don't get as much on his non-tool work, but the only thing about it is I think he just commits a little bit too much to the nautical theme. Like, every single one of the lyrics is like, swap the poop deck, man overboard, hard to starboard. Like, it's every line is like a nautical line.
Just painting a picture.
But it's fine. And I think
it's
like
weird and steampunky.
Yeah. I think it works. Yeah. It's not like my favorite song on the album, but it's
enjoy the way it ends. The way it ramps up to the very end, and then it gets real heavy.
Yeah, that is good. Yeah, and I wasn't expecting to hear as much guitar on this album as I do, to be honest with you.
I love just the lyrics of Poseidon's on a Mission. Throw the extras over.
Women and children first.
But yeah.
Tumbleweed is largely banjo driven.
Mm-hmm.
And it really reminds me. Do you know Gomez? Do you know the band Gomez?
Yes.
Do you ever listen to? They have an album called How We Operate, but the title track, very reminiscent of that song.
That's nice.
But I love it. Either way, like it's not plagiaristically. It's just a coincidence. But I do like that. You know, having a banjo instead of an acoustic guitar is the ballad.
I really love how like Western guitar and bass driven this album could be at points. Like like Toma especially as one of my favorite middle eighths ever since Failure.
Wow, no way.
Yeah, totally. Like it's such a groove.
It's very cool.
Absolute groove.
The Rapture, the other song you were talking about.
Yeah,
that one is like driven by fantastic. I think it's Matt McJunkins who does the bass for A Perfect Circle also.
Yes.
Or like he records it anyway.
And a few other things, yeah.
There's a
the Beta
really
Machine.
Great fuzzy bass line that mm-hmm. that kind of holds the glues that whole song together.
Yeah, the guitar influenced some of the verse parts here in Fragments.
Oh, really?
You hear that kind of western-y
feel? Yeah.
That's totally from this album.
Okay. And the chorus on that is great. Like that, you know, he does have a way with words when he wants to. I think, you know, that I'm gonna drop you like Cain dropped Abel.
That's really nicely.
It's a good line.
Ends pretty huge. Like some stuff we've called from earlier on with the reverb swelling from Joy Formidable.
Yeah,
like
it's very totally proggy.
Proggy
finish. Which again is like Toolish. Although at this point now, I feel like I've gone too deep into his Maynard's side projects and not deep enough into Tool, where I'm in this weird hobbled, crippled position where I don't know Tool well enough now.
Yeah, I think go for Tool first and then come back to this.
It's too late, man.
Because there's so much to give.
It's too late now. Now I know Perfect Circle really well, and Pussifer reasonably well, and I feel like I still only have a very cursory knowledge of Tool.
Yeah, I think once you hit Country Boner, You'll really know Pussifer.
Oh, right, sure. Yeah. Is that off Money Shot?
That's from an EP.
Oh, okay.
One EPs.
Okay. but yeah, Dirge again, and this was a pleasant surprise. I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm.
There's so many shades of this band. I quite love this.
Yeah.
I enjoy Pussifer releases more than I enjoy A Perfect Circle releases sometimes.
Oh. I enjoyed this.
Well, I haven't had. I can't really, you know.
I don't enjoy this more than Mare de Nam, but I definitely enjoy it more than Eat the Elephant.
Yeah.
It's
different.
Yeah, it's different. Well, it's different, like, composers. Yeah. But, there's a lot to enjoy here. And it doesn't... It's not like a complete knee-jerk reaction to Tool in terms of, like, there's still lots of guitars.
Yeah, it's really...
And riffs and
really graceful, I think. Not too much of a one-man show thing, which is fantastic.
Not at all.
No way it could be.
Not at all. Conditions of My Parole by Pussifer, Pussifer. Actually, well worth your time.
Oh, totally.
Well worth your time.
Every album we've done so far is absolutely that. Like, oh my God, what a year.
What a year.
And I had to skip Electric Six this week.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I had to skip Beartooth, which I'm really
Holy
enjoying.
Shit. Yeah.
Oh, there's loads of albums that are, you know, well, we might come back to them.
Yeah.
But in any case... that has been Kill Shuffle for another week.
Yes.
Keep up with us on social media. Drop us a line on Twitter. And we will see you when we see you.
Keep watching the skies.
The skies!